Support for In the Garden comes from The Flower Farm, featuring fresh-cut flowers and bouquet subscriptions, soils and amendments, shade and black ground cloth. The Flower Farm, open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. About the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and pick me up digging. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't. Good afternoon on this sort of dreary day today. Welcome to In the Garden. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson, and with us all the way from Juneau, Ed Byarski is on the other line.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi there, Mindy. And there's no sort of dreary about it. It is coming down buckets here.
Is it really?
But we're ready to spread the gravel in the greenhouse foundation, so great progress has been made.
So
the ditches are flowing.
Oh, good. Tell us about the project that you're working on, and how does this all start when you're wanting to, well, somebody obviously there in Juneau is putting in a greenhouse and a bunch of stuff from scratch. And how do you get going on a project like that?
Right. Well, it was, a year and a half ago, it was, a salmonberry patch with a bunch of old rotting logs from clearing for the house, which was built 17 years ago. So we actually used some of those logs. We had the fellow with... Then there was some stump and other junk. We laid down some of the logs in one area, laid them down flat, and then piled the muskeg on top of that for the future garden spot. And kind of just did cleanup work, let it settle over the winter. Since then, the folks decided on a greenhouse, an 8x12 greenhouse, for which we had to get, I don't know how picky your building inspector people are, but here they need to get a building permit for this, partly because they were running electrical wiring to the greenhouse, but they'll still have a hose for watering. And it also had to be certain we've got 25-foot setback from the main street here for building. So we lots of measurements later. Built a pad, dug down. Luckily, didn't have to dig down too far before we got into solid ground. Filled up with about 16 or 18 inches of rock and sand to set the greenhouse on. This is a kit greenhouse. Came all in a couple of big boxes that we will then put up. So, and then the base of the greenhouse, its foundation is just 4x6 treated timbers. And right now we just finished leveling those up, spiking them together, and are filling that in with D1 on top of a vapor barrier. So the idea here is that we're trying not to have too much moisture coming up inside the greenhouse from the underlying soil, because it was we are downhill from the highway or from the street, so water does drain down. But again, on the uphill side, we also put in a line of large rocks, 3 to 4 foot boulders, and put rock underneath that for support. So now we're watching the water draining around and away from both the greenhouse site and the area itself, around the greenhouse and above the greenhouse toward the street. It has a nice berm. We're going to be planting rhododendrons and Japanese maples and perennials and stuff next year. So right now we're going to, we're just finishing things up. We're going to cover the soil over with visqueen plastic, and then it should drain over the winter. And I did also add to the soil before we added the sand. I mean, it's muskeg. Added wood ashes and green sand and then rock phosphate and other nitrogen fertilizers and compost and horse manure will follow next year when we get ready for the planting, to do the rest of our soil improvement effort.
Okay, well, almost, I guess with you, it's nice to see the rain because they can see the drain patterns as you're doing the work now, so, you know.
Well, even before, yeah, I mean, we started the digging, at least the initial excavation was last week, and then we got some rain, so, yeah, we got it to see that it was draining as we hoped it would, and so now we've got enough rock around the edges. There will be, well, some parts of the earth will be dry stream bed with, so we'll have fabric and some rounded gravel in it, but that will continue to drain out and away from this area. And it, so it is raised, and everything I anticipate growing very nicely, and maybe 2 or 3 years from now, it'll be on the garden tour. You know, you can probably come and visit it. At least I can bring you over here and see it when you come up here next month.
Oh, great. That would be great.
So we've taken before pictures and during pictures, and I have yet to do some of the after pictures. Often I forget that, but so that's kind of seeing how it's developed. And then once things start to grow, we'll be good too. And it'll be fun putting the greenhouse together early in the spring.
Sure, yeah. Well, it is pouring down rain there. I don't know if it's raining here yet, but it's supposed to get kind of windy and stormy. It was a little bit windier earlier. Maybe kind of getting into that storm weather, and anything in particular we should be doing with some of our plants in this type of weather to help them?
Well, we had, yeah, last weekend here we had, you know, serious winds. I mean, there was 20 to 40 knot winds and more, and interesting swirling different, I mean, it was definitely kind of a different storm system that came through Saturday afternoon and Sunday. So, and unfortunately I got called by a lady who had an apple tree, probably a 15-year-old Dolgo crab apple tree, snap off in this storm. And it snapped off right at the base, right at ground level, unfortunately probably at the graft level too. So, I mean, she was hoping to hear me say, oh, we can just stand it back up again and it'll continue to grow, and I couldn't give her that sort of good news. So
that's horrible.
It's an indication of some of these trees, they are particularly with apple and cherry trees, and if the gardener knows that they are dwarf to semi-dwarf trees, and if you're in an area that's, you know, is subject to some good winds, maybe it's only one windstorm a year, but that's, of course, all it takes, that you have to plan for staking, and not just staking for a couple of years, which is our normally what we want, and then we remove the stakes and ties, but for these dwarf fruit-bearing trees that can have, you know, a large fruit load on them, or, you know, worse than that, of course, is a large bear, you know, going for the fruit load. I mean, it's kind of hard to protect against that without an electric fence. So, you know, perhaps putting in permanent stakes and ties that are adjustable, because you can't, I've seen too many ties, whether it be wire and hose or rope or other stuff, that actually girdles the tree because they weren't taken off or they weren't loosened in a timely fashion. Like every year, you know, the tree grows and you just can't tie these tightly. That's why, you know, you need a loose ties. I use it's kind of a woven nylon strapping. It's really, really strong, but you can make fairly good sized loops. And if you have three stakes around the tree, then the tree can still move some, which is important. But again, it's less likely to get hopefully knocked over by the by the wind. On the other hand, there are snow plows and kids playing football and other things, which can also be hazardous to the tree.
That's right. Well, it was definitely windy here, and although I didn't see a lot of leaves or anything on the streets, but people were telling me that their flower pots had been blown over, and I woke up that morning and asked Rodney, was it windy? Because our umbrella and table were completely off of our deck and onto the backyard. And
exactly.
that was an indication
and,
to
yeah,
me.
I mean, I
like,
had begonias,
wow.
You know, the tuberous begonias are large,
yes.
Succulent. Very heavy with big flowers at this point. So again, you get wind and rain. I had a big one snap off. So again, that's something for folks to think about. Maybe they want to put some more stakes in and around those begonia pots, because they'll normally last. Mine normally last flowering, continue to flower until, you know, mid to late October or longer. So if we want to keep them looking good, you know, protect them a bit or give them a little bit of extra support so that they don't snap off and then you lose all that. It isn't, in the long run, it's not going to hurt the tuber if you're overwintering tubers, but it's unfortunate to see them break off.
We have some beautiful begonias here in town, like Singley Alley Bookstore has them and other people have them. Begonia isn't something that I have usually had. So how do you stake a begonia?
Well, normally, and again, particularly if you're getting a bigger and bigger tuber year after year, if you overwinter these, and we'll talk about overwintering them a little later on, but bamboo sticks, good old alder sticks, as far as that goes. When you plant them is the best way to go. And if you've got a large enough pot, you can use tomato cages. For some of these plants are big enough. I mean, some of my begonias are close to 3 feet tall. And they've got, some of these have stems that are an inch to an inch and a half in diameter. And they're very succulent and they're very brittle. So if you put that, you know, you plant the tuber and then put it the right size of tomato stake, tomato cage in the pot with them, then they can grow up through and they're pretty well supported. Otherwise, using bamboo sticks or using alder sticks and just some twine, you know, if you're using green twine perhaps, and wind it around them, that, and eventually the plant goes over. You don't normally even notice them.
Okay. All right. So, I'm thinking more of like begonias hanging down, hanging plants, but they do get tall before they hang down.
Yeah, the hanging basket begonias don't have as much of an issue, I don't think, with it. I think they're more flexible, just generally more flexible because they are drooping over, and they swing with the wind. And again, that's one thing, too, that the wind and the movement helps to strengthen stems. So, you know, it's a trade-off there. All the staking, you know, with our staking of trees, that's why we want trees to be able to move some, because they will grow stronger roots to brace them, just like the our native, well, look at the spruce trees and alder trees. And when they're out in an open area, you get this huge tree, but it's got a very wide-spreading root system compared to a tree, the trees in the forest. Or, and I'm sure you've seen it too, if somebody does a subdivision somewhere or, you know, just clears a lot. And then because of a bunch of trees have been removed, and especially if the stumps are removed also, then they are destabilized. They are not all, you know, they're not all linked together anymore like they were in the forest. And the forest buffers the winds coming through. So compared to, you know, one tree out in an open area versus those thick ones in the forest that are suddenly left, you leave one tree here and one tree there from, you know, the nicest trees in the forest, and you take everything else away, those trees are at very high risk of go snapping off or tipping over because the roots can't hold them up. You don't have as much root system and stability at their base. So that's something for people developing a lot or whatever, and you'll see it on, you know, when the Forest Service does a clear cut, and you got this straight edge, and normally, very often, you will see the edges of those trees at the edges will fall over because they've got more wind exposure.
Okay. I was going to ask you, too, about feeding hanging baskets and stuff like that. When my hanging baskets start getting ugly, this time of the year, I don't take care of them like I should, and really what I need to do probably is give them some fertilizer.
That is particularly, that applies to, you know, the fuchsias, the begonias, and other, you know, whether it be hanging baskets or potted flowers, and again with the annuals too, that yes, if you want them to continue flowering, you need to be deadheading them, taking off the seed heads, seed pods, because you don't want them to make seeds. And this also applies to all those little fruits on the fuchsia, the fuchsia plants, because those too are taking energy from the plant. And if you want them to keep flowering, you need to remove the seed pods and fruits from those plants and keep feeding them. Again, with the amount of rain, particularly if you have plants that are out exposed to full rainfall, they really leach the fertilizer out of the pots. So you got to keep giving them some more if you want to keep them looking good.
Yeah, okay. I might deadhead this weekend and see if I can't, you know, keep them going a little bit longer with some fertilizer.
Yeah, I mean, if it's hard if they've already set a bunch of seed, they've used, essentially they have completed their life cycle. It's kind of like the humpies coming up the creek.
Right.
That when they spawn and they die. You know, with a lot of the annuals, whether that be lobelias or nasturtiums or some of these other things, if they manage to set some seed, they have completed their life cycle. So they don't really need to keep going unless they're being fed again. But that's why if you keep deadheading them, we can't do that to the humpies, keep them growing to be 10-year-old humpies and growing to 50 pounds. But, you know, they use up their energy. I mean, they use it all up and then it's over.
All righty. And I was going to ask you, somebody in town asked me about some seed planting. I know you sold some seeds here a couple weekends ago, and she has a bunch of your columbine seeds. How should she go about planting those? Like, she wants to sprinkle them on the hillside. Should she just go ahead and sprinkle? Should she mix them with a little bit of sand and soil first, or plant each one individually? What do you think?
Okay. if she's starting out with a bare hillside, you know, for whatever reason, somebody scraped all the weeds and stuff off there, you can just sprinkle those seeds along with things like those primrose seeds I had. All of those can be sprinkled out right now. They are not likely to sprout at this time of year.
Right.
But they are going to get the cool, wet conditions that we have, and then cold conditions through the winter will then stimulate them to break dormancy, and then first thing in the spring they will sprout. Again, if she wanted to go out and gather some of the wild lupins, or if somebody in town has pink lupins, you know, if this is a sandy, gravelly hillside, the columbines and the lupins will thrive on that stuff. And with the moisture, if you got more organic matter, the primroses will do fine too. Particularly the Florindes and the Japonicas, the pink ones and the yellow and orange ones. You know, they will all thrive. And we're some of this area that we've here on my project that I'm working on, again near the highway, near the road, and we cleaned out the ditches and stuff too. So I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to come back with a bunch of those seeds and sprinkle them out now. If you want to get a good wide spread, sometimes it's worthwhile if you've got some sand, you can actually mix some seeds with one or two cups of sand, mix them up in a bowl or a cup or something like that, and then that kind of gives you you can spread them more evenly if they're mixed into the sand, and then you've got more stuff to throw as opposed to a pretty tiny handful of seed.
Right, right. You don't think that the rain is going to wash them all away too much or anything?
Well, again, she can. I suppose it depends on how steep this bank is.
Uh-huh.
But if she goes along and rakes, you know, do a horizontal raking on the bank so that you make the little ridges there on the bank, then that the seeds
sure.
will collect into. I mean, you don't want to have it on a real smooth bank. And by the same token, you can't really seed, you know, do the wildflower seeding onto a bank that already has lots of weeds and other things growing on it. So I'm hoping this is bare ground that she's starting with.
Okay. And
you know, the new seedlings have a tough time competing with established buttercups and grasses and all the other assorted stuff that's growing around here.
Okay. Let me remind everybody, our phone number here is 772-3808 or 888-772-3808. If you have a question that you want to ask Ed before we let him get back to his big project today. So, Ed, are you going to be at the food festival in Juneau? What is that all about this weekend?
Right. This weekend is the occasion. It happens down at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council downtown. And so there will be several of us who will be selling various different vendors. There might even be folks selling fish. There have been in the past, frozen salmon and halibut, and plus produce. I mean, we don't have a weekly a bi-weekly market like you do in Petersburg. But there will be folks with spices and herbs and garlic and potatoes and other stuff. I will be taking some of my own, some plants, some herb plants and some other stuff. To the sale, And past years, we've got folks selling gardening books. Sometimes we'll have the books, one of the bookstores come to town, come in with gardening books and cookbooks and that sort of thing. Usually we'll have workshops. We've at least got workshops on home brewing and composting and growing kale that I know of so far. There's one lady has lots of different kinds of flavored and infused vinegars and olive oils and that sort of thing, which are quite tasty. Usually there's folks selling jams and jellies, hopefully fresh baked goods. I like to swap my, I'm happy to swap for some of the other tasty stuff that are there too. So it'll be an interesting time. We've got some hydroponics people who are usually selling kits and supplies for growing hydroponically.
Uh-huh.
And they grow the basil in town. That's, I mean, gorgeous, absolutely beautiful potted basil. They grow hydroponically. They sell in the grocery stores here.
Well, that sounds like fun. Some folks from they emailed me and asked if I would like to come up and help this year, and I was already at our market that's coming up Saturday. For those of you who don't know, we have a Saturday market from 10 until 1 at the A&B Hall. There'll be produce and lots of baked goods and goodies. That's this Saturday. But I told them that maybe next year, Ed, we could even do a little cooking demo up there.
Sure. Yeah, and normally they aim for the last weekend of August. Now, this past weekend, we just had the Community Garden Harvest Fair. And so we had lots of we had competition for folks, not just from the community garden bringing their produce and flowers and other stuff, but also from home gardens all over Juneau.
Nice.
And it was a great time. The weather held off for us for a change. It started to rain and blow about 1 o'clock. But lots of beautiful produce and way too many zucchinis, of course. But a lot of other good stuff. And so lots of ribbons were given out, and folks were quite excited about that, too.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're always busy up there, Ed, and looks like I'll be making a trip in September, so I will come by and visit, and we can check out your new project down the road.
Okay, will do. Thanks, Mindy.
All right, thanks. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next...
All right.
Next week, I guess, or we're going to...
Yep.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, till next week.
Okay, take care, Ed. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown.
Thanks to Ed Bajarski for joining us today with tips on staking up our trees and begonias and making sure we still fertilize some of our plants. Season isn't quite over yet, and we don't want to lose anything when it's windy and rainy.
Homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love, homegrown tomatoes.
Support for In the Garden comes from The Flower Farm, featuring fresh-cut flowers and bouquet subscriptions, soils and amendments, shade and black ground cloth. The Flower Farm, open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing.
Homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat